Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
Product prices mostly higher. One modest exception, we lowered our cheese price forecast by 2 cents per pound, now at $1.84 per pound for 2025, reflecting some new production capacity that has come online, increasing supplies, putting a little bit of pressure on prices, but also making us even more competitive in those export markets.
USDA's World Ag Outlook Board Chairman, Dr. Mark Chekanowski.
Seeing a lot of strong domestic demand supporting water prices, non-fat, dry milk, dry whey, all of the main products outside of cheese. We adjusted the prices higher this month, both 2025 and 2026, with the class prices reflecting the product prices. Class 3 price for 2025 was reduced just a little bit, 15 cents per hundredweight, reflecting those slightly lower cheese prices. But other than that, Class 3, Class 4 prices increased for 2025 and 2026.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
CHS will close its grain export terminal at the Port of Duluth Superior by the end of August. Built originally in 1936, the terminal has 18 million bushels of storage served by BNSF and Canadian Pacific Kansas City Railroads. Currently handles 60 to 70% of the port's annual grain volume. Closure marks a broader shift away from Great Lakes shipping. Once a major export point for Northern Plains wheat, Duluth Superior's grain shipments have dropped significantly from 9.2 million metric tons in 1978 to 645,000 tons in 2022. Now more grain moves through deepwater ports like Texas Gulf and the Pacific Northwest, offering lower ocean freight rates. Now, the timing coincides with the new Surface Transportation Board decision allowing CPKC to move wheat from Northern Plains elevators to the Port of Houston, where CHS also operates a terminal. The regulatory change may further reduce the role of Duluth Superior as a grain outlet. USDA's July livestock, dairy, and poultry outlook adjusts multiple forecasts across livestock sectors. 2025 beef production estimate lowered due to slower cattle slaughter, but the 2026 forecast increases on anticipated higher marketings. USDA raising 2025 steer price estimates based on recent data, while next year's prices are unchanged. May beef imports surged 60% year over year to 550 million pounds, leading to upward revisions for the next 2 years' import totals. Beef exports also revised higher in both years due to recent shipping trends. Now, for dairy, better than expected margins and inventory trends prompted USDA to raise milk cow numbers and milk output projections for the next 2 years. Milk production forecast 228.3 billion pounds this year. And the all milk price projections, $22 per hundredweight this year, $21.65 next year. And for pork, higher litter rates and carcass weights are offsetting reduced sow inventories. Pork production forecast at 28 billion pounds, with hog prices averaging nearly $69 per hundredweight. Broiler production and prices rose slightly. Turkey and egg outlooks are mixed. And finally, USDA's July WASD report projects a record-setting corn harvest for this marketing year. Output forecast 398.9 million metric tons. That would surpass the previous record of 389.7 set just 2 years ago. Soybean and wheat harvest projected at 118 million metric tons and 52.5 respectively. Corn export projections falling slightly, 67.9 million metric tons, though strong early sales to Mexico have pushed new crop unshipped balances 49% above last year's level. Right now, Mexico alone accounts for 64% of that volume. It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
My name is Mandy Minnick. I hold the position of Senior Vice President, Stakeholder Relations with AgWest Farm Credit, located in Spokane, Washington. We are a member-owned, locally governed cooperative and a proud member of the Farm Credit System.
Many testifying last week before a House Ag Subcommittee, a hearing on financing farm operations.
Along with 58 other farm credit institutions, we share a critical mission to support rural communities and agriculture with reliable, consistent credit and financial services today and tomorrow. As a cooperative, farm credit profits are used in only two ways: either retained in the institution to build financial strength and support more lending to our customers, or returned to our customers via patronage dividends. Annually, our board approves the distribution of cash dividends to customers through our patronage program. Representing 54% of our total earnings in 2024, this equated to $414 million returned to eligible customers last year. While patronage benefits help to effectively reduce the total borrowing costs for our customers, today's producers in the western U.S. are facing down markets across most crops. It is troubling when specialty crops, which are mainly influenced by market demand at home and abroad, are incurring multiple years of loss. The struggle in today's ag economy are serious, and what makes this economic downturn unique is the widespread impact across most commodities. Price declines, higher input cost, shrinking margins, tariff volatility, ag labor, environmental and regulatory pressures, and farm bill uncertainty are impacting not only business viability, but also the mental health in rural communities. Farmers and ranchers are managing today's problems under the 2018 Farm Bill solutions, which served agriculture well then, but no longer adequately address current challenges. And the longer this takes, the more problems elevate. One thing that we can control in the current ag environment is advocating for the certainty that a strong farm bill will bring our customers. Important to AgWest producers is the passage of a strong farm bill to advance multiple important tools and programs. Federal crop insurance is a vital risk mitigation tool for our customers. AgWest is committed to serving all producers regardless of size, complexity, or commodities that they grow. Whole farm revenue protection and micro-farm policies are successful risk tools for traditional crops like apples in Washington, grapes in California, and non-traditional crops like wasabi and kiwi berries that they grow in Oregon. We are grateful to Congress for their ongoing investment and improvements in this program. AgWest supports the Producer and Agricultural Credit Enhancement, PACE Act, that would modernize FSA loan programs through increased loan limits that reflect current costs of production agriculture. Full details are included in my written testimony, in which I share how strong FSA guaranteed loan programs assist agricultural lenders in providing opportunities, particularly for young and beginning farmers. The Fishing Industry Credit Enhancement Act would allow farm credits to provide commercial fishing-related businesses access to farm credit loans, just like other farm businesses do. Reliable credit sources for fishing-related businesses, such as tender boats or diesel mechanics in the communities that count on fishing to survive, is a much-needed resource.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
My name is Jerry Mixon. I am the owner of KLM Farms and 6M Farms. I live in Winter Haven, Florida, and those two farms I mentioned are processed orange farms. We are growing product in what's called CUPS, citrus under protective screen. This is mainly to avoid the psyllid agents devastating most outdoor groves with disease. Winter Haven is located in the central, we call it the heart of Florida, just between Orlando and Tampa. Agriculture has been a historical significance for this area for decades. We battle hurricanes, we battle diseases, we battle droughts. It's a difficult life and it's a difficult industry, but we love it. We love working outdoors when we can produce beautiful, great tasting product. It's one of the most rewarding jobs I've ever done. We use insurance as a way to manage that risk. Recently, we've been able to access the the hurricane and the tropical storm insurance. They don't solve all the problems. They do allow us to pay for some expenses. One of the things that makes the HIP insurance and the tropical storm insurance so critical for us, the speed at which it happens. Boom, there comes a check. It's wonderful. Each of the hurricanes that have come through, Hurricane Ian, Hurricane Irma, and Hurricane Milton, each one presents its own challenges. We had over 24 inches of rain in that particular storm and caused some unique challenges and repairs, but we were able to do it. Makes me feel a lot better. Without it, it would be really a challenge. We have that in our back pocket. We know at least financially we can survive that.
My name is Matt Machado. I'm a citrus farmer, live in Lake Wales, Florida. We farm 1,700 acres of various varieties of citrus. I enjoy farming just because of the challenges that are inherently in it. The risk we face in Florida is hurricanes have lately been one of the number one factors, and then freezes historically have been more severe than hurricanes. The safety net of crop insurance, it gives you hope for the future. It still hurts every time you have a negative impact from a weather event, but having it lets you know that you can keep going and you're not going to have to worry that you're going to go out of business that year because of the crop loss. And we carry a whole farm revenue policy that it protects our revenue history and gives us a baseline where if we do undergo one of those events that we will be able to remain profitable and be ready for the next crop year. Yeah. So without the crop insurance, especially here in Florida, the weather events we've sustained over the last 4 years, if we didn't carry the level we did, the operation wouldn't be able to sustain itself and we likely wouldn't have been able to keep going. It's extremely important for me to keep the farm going for future generations or else I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing with the stress levels of this job and just I like the beauty of agriculture and the natural lands and every day we're getting encroached on by development and so I'd like to keep it in ag for as long as possible. So my employees, they often are concerned with the future because everywhere around us they see growth getting pushed up and they see the hurricane damage, they see the crop loss and they're like, what are we going to do, boss? And I tell them, I was like, don't worry, we got a plan for this. We have an insurance policy that protects us from these events. We just got to look forward and keep doing what we're doing and we're going to be all right and we're not giving up.
Now, according to Farm Bureau, funding for compliance and integrity oversight in the One Big Beautiful Bill increased to $10 million per year, and administrative reimbursements restructured to better reflect the cost of delivering the program in high-risk areas. It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The reality is that farming is getting tougher every year. Input costs are up and market prices are down. If we don't support today's farmers, there won't be a next generation ready to step in.
At a recent House Ag Subcommittee hearing on financing farm operations, Georgia Representative Austin Scott.
We must ensure the resources available to those who provide capital to our producers can meet the moment. This is why Farm Bill programs matter. They form the foundation of affordable, reliable credit for our producers. Lending tools and risk management programs like crop insurance and commodity programs work hand-in-hand to help farmers withstand downturns and sustain their operations. The loan programs to the safety net, it's critical that producers and their lenders have as many tools in the toolbox as possible to ensure dependable access to capital. This is essential to maintain the safest, most abundant food supply in the world. Over the past 6 years, we've seen nearly $130 billion in ad hoc assistance flow to producers. Many of that in my district. While that support was necessary in times of crisis, it is no substitute for a durable, predictable safety net. We owe it to farmers and lenders alike to build a system that doesn't rely on ad hoc assistance every time a disaster strikes. And I might add, the ad hoc assistance in many cases takes well over a year to get to the producers. That's exactly what the One Big Beautiful Bill does. We've strengthened the farm safety net, increased reference prices, expanded access to crop insurance, and the opportunity to add additional base acres are just a few of the real improvements that will bring more certainty to producers and reduce risk for lenders.
Also testifying at that event, Clint Hood, a banker with Synovus Bank.
Mr. Hood, you're a banker in my part of the world. I mean, you've got a front row seat to the economics of what's happening in rural America. You've outlined some of this. You know, and how, you know, our economy starts and stops with the farm economy, where we come from. Each season, certainly in the last several seasons especially, farmers have put more and more money at risk to continue to seek what, from I can tell, is a smaller and smaller profit margin. What does a long-term farm bill mean to that community that you serve, and how can we build on the work of the legislation that has recently passed to make sure that our rural communities and our specifically our ag economy can expand?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. That is a vital tool that not just the ag bankers have, but the farmers have to be able to have a farm bill that they can count on. And, you know, historically, farmers have used the commodities market, wherever that market price falls, to be able to either break even or make a profit. Now the commodity market is so depressed that all these margins are upside down. Well, the proverbial safety net that the farm bill has always provided has really way below where that margin needs to be. So the farmer finds themselves in no man's land. The commodity market can't help them survive, and the farm bill can't help them survive. So they're in between, and it's really hard on these families right now.
My time has expired, but I literally, as my neighbor was talking to me about, you know, his concerns with planting cotton, the question I asked him is, why would you plant it with the price that it's at?
Exactly.
And I know you've got the payment on the cotton picker, and you got the payments on everything else, and sometimes you got to have it in the rotation. But, man, it's sure hard to plant when you know you're going to lose X numbers of dollars per acre, even if you do everything right.
$180 per acre loss with brackets around it on paper. So you know if it's not working on paper, it's not going to work in real life either.
And that's for cotton.
Yes, sir, cotton.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
The Trump administration is suing California over state laws it says have contributed to the high price of eggs nationwide.
Chad Smith reporting from Washington.
The administration's lawsuit targets California Proposition 2, a 2008 ballot initiative that set welfare standards for egg-laying hens, sows, and veal calves. Assembly Bill 1437, which prohibited the sale in the state of eggs for human consumption that do not meet Prop 2 standards, and the Proposition 12 ballot initiative in 2018, which set specific space requirements for hens, sows, and veal calves and banned in the state the sale of products from those animals, including the progeny of sows, if they were raised anywhere in housing that fails to meet those Prop 12 standards. NPPC appreciates the Trump administration's actions to make food affordable again, said NPPC CEO Brian Humphries. On the 4th of July, President Trump signed into law the One Big Beautiful Bill, the fiscal 2026 budget reconciliation measure that does include provisions important to agriculture like animal disease prevention and management through the National Animal Health Laboratory Network, the National Animal Disease Preparedness and Response Program, and the National Animal Vaccine Bank. It also includes provisions for research facilities, including their construction, acquisition, modernization and renovation, and the feral swine eradication and control pilot program. It also extends and enhances several tax measures that were part of President Trump's 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. National Pork Producers Council has joined over 30 business groups and agricultural organizations in expressing concern over the Trump administration's decision to withdraw from an agreement suspending an anti-dumping investigation on tomatoes from Mexico, a move that could negatively affect U.S. food prices and American jobs. In a letter to Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick, the agricultural groups pointed out that U.S. growers and distributors import more than 2 million metric tons of tomatoes annually to meet U.S. demand, and about 90% come from Mexico. They also noted that domestic tomato production has decreased because of adverse weather, labor shortages, high production costs, and other factors, making trading partners like Mexico especially crucial. NPPC submitted comments to the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative on the eligibility of sub-Saharan African nations to receive African Growth and Opportunity Act benefits. The AGOA allows countries to export goods to the United States duty-free, but requires beneficiaries of the trade program to provide reasonable and equitable treatment for U.S. imports. Several AGOA beneficiary countries have barriers to their markets for U.S. goods and services, including countries like Angola and Kenya. Two of the most troubling nations with regard to U.S. exports are Nigeria and South Africa. Pork producer leaders from the national organizations representing the U.S., Canadian, and Mexican pork industries met to discuss their common interests of producing nutritious, sustainable, and affordable pork. Hosted by the Canadian Pork Council, the trilateral meeting had several topics to discuss, including animal care and health issues, food security, and agricultural sustainability. Producers also committed to collaborate on efforts to reduce the risk of animal diseases, such as African swine fever.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
I am Brian Gilbert, Senior VP and Ag Banking Manager at the First National Bank in Sioux Falls, representing Independent Community Bankers of America.
Gilbert testifying before a House Ag subcommittee last week on financing farm operations.
I own and operate a family farm that raises cow-calf pairs, finishes approximately 750 head of cattle each year, and I also raise corn and soybeans. Our nation's more than 4,000 community banks make nearly 80% of all ag loans made by commercial banks, or $151 million. Community banks have deep roots in their communities. More than 1,000 banks are more than 100 years old and have survived the Great Depression, the Great Recession, and are still standing by their customers through good times and bad. Community banks are relationship lenders that fund local loans with local deposits. First National Bank in Sioux Falls started 140 years ago in 1885. We are a $2 billion bank, heavily involved in ag lending and risk management with a bank-owned crop insurance agency. Several of our bank's 12 ag lenders own family farms. We want to help producers buy that next parcel of ground, add to their herd, or figure out how to make their operations more efficient and productive. As a farmer myself, I can attest that agriculture can often be difficult and have great uncertainty due to extreme fluctuations in prices, weather, markets, diseases. Our bank works with farmers to prepare them for a wide variety of challenges. We look at whether producers can cash flow, and crop insurance is a very important tool. We have an insurance agency called First Ag Risk Management, or FARM. Due to the unpredictable weather, financial risks are always present. Drought, hail, floods, and other weather events put farmers and ranchers and their crops and livestock in danger. Crop insurance enables producers to repay bank loans and qualify for credit. Crop insurance fits into the bigger system of inputs, marketing, risk mitigation. Our farm agency solutions help producers build a customized risk management plan. USDA's Livestock Risk Protection Program is also quite important, and we have many producers that utilize that program. We appreciate the committee's higher USDA guaranteed farm loan limits, $3.5 million for ag real estate loans and $3 million for guaranteed operating loans are necessary given today's land values and production cost. I purchased my first farm ground, 240 acres, with USDA's down payment loan program. It's a great program for a beginning farmer. The Farm Credit System has major proposals that would fuel tens of billions of dollars or more in the new non-farm financing for the FCS at the expense of tax-paying community banks. As a government-sponsored enterprise, FCS's effective tax rate in 2024 was only 2%, far below what community banks pay. The FCS is a central community facility proposal to finance schools, fire stations, health clinics, etc., without regulators' pre-approval, considerably broadens their scope. FCS should at most be a supplemental source of credit once the private sector lenders have committed to providing the majority of funds. FCS proposes expanding housing loans in towns of 10,000, a 300% increase. 75% of all towns are below or at 5,000 population. The Farm Credit Act should be tightened to limit FCS deposit-taking activities, which is draining community banks of deposits. In conclusion, we appreciate the committee's work and we thank Congress for the $10 billion in economic loss payments, $20 billion in disaster aid, and higher reference prices and continued crop insurance protections.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
There has been an increase in farm transitions in recent years, yet questions remain for both younger and older generations considering this process. Jim Salfer of University of Minnesota Extension says, for instance, how can a beginning farmer without a home farm get into the business?
They're going to have to partner up because they just don't have the equity to come in and lock, stock, and barrel buy somebody out.
That partner being an existing farmer that can share knowledge and experience with the younger grower. Nationwide, the average age of a farmer continues to rise. But Salfer believes that may not necessarily be caused by a lack of successors.
I also think that people are aging better, so we maybe don't have that older generation that's antsy to get out of the industry. A lot of our farms maybe just aren't really big enough to support two families. So you've got to work through that and try to determine, does that mean one of them, either the older or young generation, works off the farm?
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.